Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware.
Hello, welcome to the Aware Show's Radiant Body Summit. And we're talking about basically Body 3.0. We're upgrading everything that has to do with our mind, our body, and our spirit, because of course they're all linked. And today joining me is Lynn McTaggart. Now, Lynn is an award-winning journalist. She is a medical investigator, and she has, not only that, but she's just a visionary. Lynn has such incredible insights to things that she's not afraid to bring to the public. She has talked about alternative cures for cancer. She's talked about various therapies that can heal your body. And today, we're talking about all of that and the power of intention, which is the basis of her work that she's brought to the world. Thank you so much for being here, Lynn. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Lisa. Always love to share it with you.
Well, there's a lot that you can share. You have just a wealth of knowledge. So your book, The Bond, which I see behind you, is an incredible book. And it's, I think, is that your latest book?
Yeah, it is, although I'm working on another one right now.
Of course, of course. Can you bring us up to date on some of the intention experiments that you're doing and what you do when you put together one of your experiments? They're very intensive.
Well, what I was interested in, for anybody who doesn't know what the intention experiment is, I wanted to write a book about the power of intention. And I was particularly interested in the power of lots of people thinking the same thought at the same time. And I started looking up research about that, and I couldn't find any good conclusive studies. So my husband, who's a real little instigator with me, turned to me one time and said, well, why don't you do these experiments yourself? And that sounded really dumb because I'm not a scientist. I'm just a scientific journalist and an author. But then I started thinking about it, and I thought by then, my last book before that, The Field, was in 30 languages. So I had a lot of readers, and I also knew a lot of scientists because I'd interviewed them. And I thought, well, if I set up an internet site and bring these two forces together, the scientists and the readers, I'll have the biggest mind over matter experiment in history. And that's what I've been doing since 2007. And to date, we've run 27 experiments, and 23 have shown positive, measurable, often significant effects. And they have included everything from trying to make plants grow faster to doing initial things to purify water from very different ways. We've tried it in lots of different ways.
Wow.
To lowering violence in war-torn areas. So they've been a really, really amazing ongoing experiment for me.
And
it carries on.
When you conduct these experiments, how do you control the experiment? You do a double-blind controlled study, right?
Sure. Let me explain, for instance, how the seeds one went. We decided to see if we could make plants grow faster by sending intention to a tray of seeds. So my scientists who were at the University of Arizona, I always work with a batch of credible scientists at a prestigious organization or institution. So they prepared four sets of seeds, and they sent me photographs of the seeds. They did not know which ones we were going to choose, and I ran this study six times in front of audiences that I was speaking in front of. So the first time I did it in Sydney, Australia, and I showed, I had an audience member randomly choose one of the sets of seeds. We put that up. We sent this intention to the picture, the photo. Meanwhile, the seeds are sitting back in University of Arizona, in Tucson, Arizona, thousands of miles away. So we sent intention to that photo of the seeds. The scientists, not knowing which ones we'd sent intention to, planted all four sets and then measured them 5 days later. And every single time we ran that study, the seeds sent intention grew significantly higher than the controls. In one case, twice as high. So let's unpack this for 1 second. Remember, we're not sending intention even to the thing itself. We're sending an intention to a photographic representation of that object. Right. We're also halfway around the world, and we're sending intention to that photographic representation. So what I think this indicates is that we can create essentially a psychic internet, and we do by just focusing our attention and our intention on it.
So I'm very curious about how people can do this on their own, but I want to ask you about one more study, because there's a lot that goes into these types of studies in order to make them scientifically viable. I mean, I've done it with friends here, but we haven't got the control going. So how do you measure it against, so let's talk about one of the ones that you're working on right now with people.
Okay.
How do you do this where you measure the people that are working for the intention and those that are doing nothing? Do you have those two groups?
Well, right now as we speak, one of the universities in America is setting up an experiment with me where we're going to have two groups, where we're going to be looking at the power of small groups with intention. And we're setting up two groups, and one won't send the intention and one will, and then we just look at their physiological processes to see what happens. You know, with a control, what you have to do is set up similar conditions, two or more things or people with very similar conditions. And you have to control as much as you can, so they're the same age, you know, they're the same background, maybe they have the same issues. With illness, it's very hard to do that. But when you look at a medical study, they try to get similar people with a similar condition. Or they try out a drug on a group of healthy people to see what it does. And then they have a group of people who don't take the drug but take a placebo, a sugar pill. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're trying to replicate all the time. With those seed studies, we also had control studies where we'd have four sets of seeds where no intention was sent to any of them, and those were planted too, just to compare. So we really did a very good control of the control.
And how did those seeds go?
Sorry? They didn't grow anywhere near as high as the ones sent intention. So we had, in fact, 12 experiments on those seeds to really compare. Now, when you're doing it with, you know, something like water, you can have a couple of beacons of water, you know, which we've done. We've done all kinds of experiments with water, and we've always had more than one sample so we could test it against a control. And so they try to do the same thing with people. We did one experiment. There was a problem with the setup of the experiment, but what we basically did was send intention to, we had two people, and we randomly chose one of them to send intention to lower his anxiety. And the other person, no one knew except us, the experimenters, who was being sent the intention. So the two patients did not know until they heard. And then we measured their effects. So you're always trying to get that kind of control. And also another part of scientific experiments is to make sure the scientists don't know which one you've chosen either, so that they're not affecting the experiment, because there's, you know,
the observer
this small, subtle energy that's going on essentially here. And there's such a thing as an experimenter effect, where the experimenter's experimenter's expectation can possibly affect the outcome.
Absolutely, the observer. Absolutely. So you've done things on a global scale as well, during certain political unrest and during also on the anniversary of 9/11. Could you tell us a little bit about those? Those are big scale experiments, and then we'll talk about a little how we can do this on more of a personal level too.
Okay, well, I was really interested in all the baby steps we took, and we did start out with very, very tiny baby steps with our first experiments. But then we wanted to take a great big giant leap. at least I did. And I wanted to see what would happen if we tried to lower violence. And I was inspired by the work of the Transcendental Meditation Group, who have demonstrated that when a critical mass of people are meditating in a particular area, the crime rate goes down. So I wondered, okay, what happens if we actually intend to lower violence? So the first one we did was 2008, where we sent intention to Sri Lanka, which was then in the midst of a civil war. And it was amazing what happened. We sent intention over 8 days. And in that time, violence quadrupled. So we got really worried. But immediately afterward, violence fell 74%. And the government, which had been losing the war, turned around the whole course of the war exactly during that week, won some decisive battles, and in a few months later took over the area that had been occupied by the rebel forces. A few months after that, that 25-year war was over. So, you know, did we do that?
How many people were doing the intending in the experiment?
Oh, thousands. We had thousands. We had something like 25,000 signed up. I think 15,000 finally participated. And I was keeping it kind of quiet because I don't massively advertise these. I usually advertise them to my own community, maybe a few others, because I'm trying them out as pilot studies all the time. And I'm always worried about having too many people come on, particularly since if they're all trying to come on a website, we've had issues in the past where too many people are trying to access it all at the same moment and the website crashes. We've learned since that time what to do. We use places with big, big, broad bandwidths. But it was really hard at the time, so I've always kept it a little bit quiet. But nevertheless, it caught the imagination. Thousands of people joined in. So then for 9/11, for the 10th anniversary, I was a little tired of seeing those buildings constantly come down, as we'd seen every year, every anniversary since. So I thought, let's do something different. So I contacted a guy I know who's like the Deepak Chopra of the Middle East, and he has a big following. So I asked him if he'd like to join me with an intention experiment for 9/11, and he said definitely yes. So we decided to target the two lower provinces of Afghanistan, which were the Taliban stronghold and the seat of the biggest violence. So he got all of his followers, who were from every Muslim state around the globe, you know, just all everywhere. Wow. And we had every Muslim state around the globe, including Palestine, Indonesia, all kinds of places, and all the Gulf states too, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, etc., all joining in. Then we had all of my Westerners and people from all the followers I have from around the world. So we had people from about 90 countries.
Wow.
And then intention, and it was a very cool thing because we did it on a little internet television site, and he apologized first for the Arabs, you know, and what had happened on behalf of the Arabs for 9/11, and I apologized on behalf of the West to his audience for the West's outsized response to 9/11, because, you know, there was something like 100,000 innocent people who had been killed, injured, detained, or deported during the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. So then we did this intention together, and it was just amazing. Wow. And then, you know, after this kind of experiment, you then have to sit back and wait for months to see what happened. And there were incredible drops in violence, 790% in that in those provinces alone after September when we did it, and overall 33% drop in that area, far more than other areas of Afghanistan, so much so that it was remarked upon by NATO in its report, which is where I got it from. I got it from a NATO general. And it was remarkable. What was even more remarkable was the individual thing that happened, because what happened during the experiment, we had a lot of instant messaging going on, and all of the Arabs started messaging the Westerners, and they all started becoming friends and talking together, etc. So it was a wonderful little experiment in peace and, you know, rebuilding bonds among among really estranged populations.
And I think across the world
was really talking to the West and showing them how these Arabs care too.
What I mean, just not even measuring what happened in the world, that's got to do so much for the individual. Excuse me, the person doing it, you. Yes, and all of the people involved. I mean, what was the feeling that the people?
That's what's really interesting about it, Lisa, is what's happening to the people. I mean, that's I've actually been cataloging that, too, since 2007. First of all, there's this amazing palpable feeling of oneness, almost like a mystical experience that's going on here. Because people, we don't get the opportunity to do this much. You know, we have our little lonely separate lives, and we are encouraged to be so individual and competitive, which is what I wrote about in The Bond. And what I investigated in that book was how bad that is for people, because we were meant to be the exact opposite. Everything in us needs connection, needs to be connected to other people in big, large and small units. And when we don't, we wither, basically. And so I think what's really happening for people, because I've recorded just extraordinary experiences for individual people that are life-changing, life-affirming, life-changing, which is, I won't enumerate so much because it's the subject of my next book. But what's really happening here, I think, is not just the power of intention, but the power of connection. How it feels to be connected for common purpose with a load of strangers around the world. And yes, not even connected physically. You're connected via internet site, you know?
Yes. And that's a beautiful thing, that it can be that powerful, that you were able to do that that powerfully with just the internet or with just a photo. My daughter had a soccer coach here who he was really, really not a nice guy. He was a police officer and a soccer coach, and he did both. And he embedded in the girls that they needed to be in competition with each other as well as with the team that they're against. And it was so, we said, what? Well, I'm sorry, what? How does that work? Well, you're fighting with each other. So needless to say, that team never won a game the entire year. So then we stayed with the team, but the coach changed the next year. And the minute the coach changed, they started winning games because the coach had a field of coherence, and he was teaching the girls how to work together, which they've never learned. And, I mean, it's just a small example of an experiment in connection and in coherence. And I know that you know a lot about global coherence and what we can really truly impact with our thoughts globally and in our own environment as well.
Well, yes, and I mean, I think that's such an interesting thing what happened to your daughter, Lisa. Just to say that there's one really interesting study that speaks to it, which is it was a study of a sports team, and they wanted to see the difference between people doing affirmations for themselves versus affirmations for the team. You know, affirmations we all know are things like looking in the mirror and saying, I am beautiful, I do well today, I win this game today, you know, I play my best today, you know, all those sorts of things. So this time they tried that in one team, and then they first in the team, and then they tried with the team that they would use we affirmations. We will win the game today. We do well today. We play our best. And they found when people used we as an affirmation, they performed better individually as well as a whole. So it's a really interesting thing that, you know, just thinking we makes I do better.
Interesting. That is fascinating.
Yeah.
And now, I'd love to know how we can use this on the power of our mind and to really harness that into our own healing. And I'm going to tell you a quick story of a friend of mine who was trying to get pregnant, and she's 45. And she is a personal trainer in amazing fit shape. She had two teenage boys from a prior marriage and then gotten married a second time. And she really wanted to have that experience with her second husband to have a baby. So she had been working towards it. And she had not one, but two, but three miscarriages.
Oh, dear.
So really was having a very difficult time with having this. Now, granted, she was a little bit older, but really had been eating and super clean and really taking care of her body for years. Mm-hmm. So she got a group of us together of 30 women, mm-hmm. and we started praying for her via text. And we were in this text group. And we would just, the whole thing was generated on text. She has a very deep faith, but to align all of us via text to just support her, support her, support her. And she's 6 months pregnant today.
And yay!
I know. I mean, that just happened. It was truly the validation of the power of prayer in groups.
Yes.
And so, I mean, what's to stop us from, if you go on a job interview and say, you know, use the power of prayer and call a friend and say, will you support me in this and just pray with me?
Or definitely.
Something like that. Can you, yes. does that work?
Absolutely. Well, I've been doing it now with many, many power of eight groups, as I like to call them, where I put people in little groups and I ask them to send an intention for someone with a healing challenge. And it works amazingly, I mean, astonishingly. And once again, I've been cataloging the kinds of outcomes we've had. And we've had people with arthritis and constant pain. I had a woman with scoliosis at the I Can Do It event just a few weeks ago. And she had scoliosis. She's just written to me saying that, you know, she was in constant pain. The pain is gone. And she's been, they've had to modify her seat in the car because her spine has changed, and she's taller now. So I've had all kinds of women with, I had a woman with an opacity in one eye from a cataract where she was hardly able to see, and she got 80% better. I mean, just ridiculous, extraordinary stuff you wouldn't expect. Once again, I think it's, what's going on here are two things, the power of intention, but also that power of that group and that connection is possibly a real affirmation for an individual. It's something you never get, that kind of support.
Right.
Often total strangers, that unconditional love, and it almost gives the individual permission to have his body heal, his or her body heal.
And does it, the healing last? I mean, is it a long term? Wow.
Oh, yeah. I mean, from what we've gathered, you know, and as I say, I've been surveying people for years now. Since we started doing it in 2008 with the small groups. And I'm following a group for a year now just to see what's going on with them. And, you know, astonishing things are happening. So there's that. Then there's little things you can do when you say, how can you use it? Get together in a group, as I wrote about in my intention experiment book. You know, get together as a group and send an intention to lower violence by 10% in your neighborhood. To clean up litter by 10%, to raise the grade point averages of the kids in your school by 10%. You know, I'm just
the drought in the West. I mean, we could do the drought experiment here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, well, that,
you can do that
actually brings up a good point. When you're doing these intentions, and especially, you know, if it's for your own body, would you pray for the drought to end, or would you pray for rain? And so.
I pray for rain, and I pray for, make it as specific as possible. I mean, one of the things that has occurred with our intention experiments is the more specific we are, the better. So a lot of people believe with intention, they kind of think of intention as a little request that says, universe, you decide, or God, or whomever they think of as source,
right.
decide. That's prayer. That's sort of saying, leaving yourself, being a supplicant and leaving yourself open to whatever a divine power thinks is best for you. And that is prayer. That's saying, thy will be done. You decide. With intention, I think it's a bit more of a specific request to the universe that says, I'd like this. And it's, and what we found, as I say, if you put if you put certain qualifiers on it, you're really specific, it really seems to work better.
Now, have you ever had a group that did this where it didn't work? So where a person was attended upon in terms of healing and it didn't work?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of the work that I do is about clearing the kinds of thoughts that are holding you back and clearing the sort of negativity that's holding you back, because a lot of people think of intention as, you know, the power thought. You have your power thought. Let's say you meditate in the morning, you have your power thought, you send that one out, and that's the thing that the universe hears. But we know that we're all leaky buckets. We know from the science that we are emanating, you know, that we are little beings that emanate a tiny current of light all the time. It's called biophoton emissions, and this isn't, you know, science fiction. This is science fact. We know from many scientists in their work that living things are all sending out that light, and other living things are sending it back synchronicitously. And there's no doubt that the same sort of thing is happening with our thoughts, that our thoughts are perhaps one other kind of light like that. And certainly I've done plenty of experiments and work demonstrating that people, everybody is psychic. Everybody has the ability to pick up this information from each other. Mm. The point is, because we're leaky buckets, you know, we're sending out intention and thoughts to the world at every moment. So think about it. Every little judgment you hold, all the thoughts that you throw out there, all the flotsam and jetsam that's rattling through your brain, every last horrific, mendacious thought, all of those things the universe is hearing too. And the summation of them is really your intention. That becomes your life's intention. So there are many people who may have that positive power thought. I'm going to get that dream job. I'm going to heal X problem. But most of the time what they're thinking about is, no, you won't. And that's what the universe is hearing.
And it cancels it out.
Yeah.
And so that's the reason why people say, why am I not getting what I want? How come I'm not able to manifest what I'm looking for?
Because they don't really believe it. And, I mean, this goes into my husband's work, too, who he works very much about healing the past, which has taken over, the past self, as he calls it, which takes us over like an unwanted guest. And that past self is the filter through which we see the world, and oftentimes that's a negative one. And so what that really is the constant voice we hear in our ear that says, look how you muffed that one, Ace, you know, or I hate my hair, or God, I look fat in that, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's that kind of negative, constant self-talk that undermines any kind of positive intention.
How much of other people's intention gets into our space where it comes from, say, advertising or from, you know, negative thoughts being not vibrated towards us, but sent towards us through, if you don't buy this, you're not going to be happy, or when you buy this, you're going to be happy, saying you're not happy until that moment. Do you know
sure.
what I'm saying?
Oh, gosh, that has a huge effect on us if we're not conscious of it. Definitely. I mean, you know, if we're not conscious of it, negative intention of all varieties can really get to us. And that's about really staying within your own divine space, you know, overcoming that of your sense of what you were put on this earth to do. Okay. I mean, that is a very powerful antidote to a lot of the messaging that we're getting from every source, particularly women.
So how do we counteract that? You basically could broadcast a signal every single day saying, I'm all right, I'm perfect the way that I am.
I think, Lisa, it is that kind of work, you know, on acceptance of yourself as you are and having that fill your head, having that fill. I mean, a lot of what I teach in my workshops is how to. I mean, there's a lot of processes for that, but how to overcome that constant negative inner dialogue and to start changing that with constant positive intention.
So powerful.
Yeah, it is powerful. It takes some work, but it is powerful.
Absolutely. Okay, so you're losing a little bit of light there. You're getting darker. Is the sun setting in London?
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's, I guess it's 4:45 or something like that. Yeah, really darker.
Is there a light that we can put on you?
Let me just see. I'll just see.
Because I want to see your face. I know it's going to get a little bit there.
Okay. We'll
be back in just a moment. During the time. Okay, I wanted to give you the website where Lynn has put together an incredible educational package that really teaches us how to use the power of intention in many different ways. The website is theawareshow.com/Lynn, L-Y-N-N-E, and it's about training your brain. And it's many of the things that we're in this body summit. Our brain is the master controller of our entire body and also spirit, because how we think about spirit was what I'm talking about. And so the website again is theawareshow.com/Lynn, L-Y-N-N-E. Can you talk a little bit about the training your brain that you have and that you're talking about in the educational package?
Well, as I said earlier, we're all leaky buckets. We're all emanating information all the time. So one of the things about being a master of intention is also being somebody able to pick up other people's thoughts, basically. And as I said earlier, we're all intuitive, but we're all psychic, but we just haven't trained ourselves to do this. And
right.
So what I do in brain training is help people to become more psychic, help people to be much more sensitive to the intentions of others by using a lot of processes that essentially turn off the cognitive part of their brains, the thinking, reasoning part, that's the frontal lobes, that gets in the way of receiving information intuitively. And so there are a number of techniques with that, and I go into a great deal of that. And I also teach people how to essentially pick up the first thing that comes to them. Because most of us don't trust our intuition. And what happens is when information comes to us, it goes directly to the amygdala, which is the primitive emotional part of the brain. And then 11 seconds later, it travels to the frontal lobes. And what happens in that 11 seconds is oftentimes when we get a first hit of something, it's correct. A first sense of something, it's correct. But then we reason it away. And that's what we do with our frontal lobes. So one of the things I talk about is, you know, how do you deal with and accept and, you know, go with those first hits? You know, any remote viewer will talk about going with the first thing that comes to you and
right.
then slowly filling in the detail.
How do you get that conscious mind offline? How do you knock it out?
Well, you do by just, you do all kinds of practices that are nonverbal. You know, even doing things like drawing, painting, accesses different parts of your brain, and it just is training them.
Okay.
And that's just one way. You know, there's many, many other ways of doing it that keep you in the present. And, you know, one of those, believe it or not, is there is a thing that I talk about called seeking. Scientists know that mammals of all sorts share different kinds of basic emotions and needs, and one of them is, you know, play and rage, things like that. But one of them is seeking, which means anticipation. It's what we've been given to make us want to hunt for things. And, of course, there's an obvious reason why we were given this, which is so that we'd hunt for food. But now that we've got Safeways and Whole Foods, we don't need to do that. But we still have that need to hunt. And that's a really important need. It's the feeling of the hunt, not the catch, the anticipation of something. And when we are anticipating something, it's like nirvana to us. It releases a lot of dopamine. We feel really good about it.
Right.
And it also fuses the rational and intuitive parts of the brain, start speaking to each other a bit more. So we learn a bit more about gut hunches when we're in seeking mode. So one of the things I suggest is that people stay curious by watching whodunits or doing Sudokus or other puzzles, things that engage you in hunting for an answer.
Or really, even reading. I mean, reading also have to do with that, or researching?
Maybe researching, because it's hunting for something. Shopping, hunting for something, going to a flea market. Something where you're really engaged in hunting, you'll find that you're staying right in the present. And that kind of thing really does, as I said, start developing the intuitive part of the brain.
So interesting. Yes, that's great. So developing your intuition, but also using the intentionality of your own mind and what you create to start to begin to heal your body. And now, how do you get that the negative sabotager out of the way, where you're looking at your body and you're imagine it completely in that perfect state of health, or your brain fully agile and active? When you are imagining that and then you open your eyes and that still hasn't happened instantaneously, the subsequent doubter, how do you get that moved offline? Because the intention experience that you are doing have repetition to them, right?
No, we just do it once. I mean, when we've done the big peace intention experiments, we've repeated it 8 times over 8 days, only because we were following another study design. We were following the TM studies, and we thought, okay, let's start with what they did, but okay, use intention. So we were just doing that as a design, and we also thought, well, we're trying to move a big mountain here, so maybe we have to do it more than once. But most of the time, we're just doing it once. I think with intention, you can do it more than one time, but you also have to put it out to the universe and then forget about it and just trust the process.
Really?
Sometimes it will, yeah. Huh. You have to trust the process because, if you the more you do obsess about something, I think the more you do allow negativity to enter your mind. I'm not saying don't send it again, but if you're constantly obsessed about it, then you start going, well, why isn't it here? And, the universe will send you a lot of things in a different way from what you asked for.
Yes.
You may get what you want, but it may be delivered in a way that you never expected. So I think you have to, go with that sense of certainty and trust the process. So what I suggest you do is you do your intention, you let it go, you think about everything else, you go on about your business, and then maybe send another one the next day and go on about your business. But when you go on about your business, one of the things to become conscious of is any time you are self-sabotaging in some way and saying, no, it's not going to happen, write it down.
Oh.
And that'll become you'll become very conscious of it.
So that's just to get it out of your head, basically.
Now, yeah, become aware of what you're thinking, because you're thinking a lot of things unconsciously.
So let me ask you, Lynn, how do you, Lynn McTaggart, do the intention, your own intention? Like, what is a current one you're working on now? Without being too personal, can you tell me what your practice is? How do you get this into your day?
Well, I've had to do it quite a lot with my magazine, What Doctors Don't Tell You, because, we've been, for 3 years, we've been more or less constantly attacked. And so I've had to use intention with that. I've had to use intention against all kinds of odds. I use it for my children. One is going through final exams, to send intention that all will be well. I use it for myself right now. I'm healing a knee that had tendonitis, so I'm using intention for that. I'm using energy therapies with intention for that, and seeing remarkable results. And
wow.
Again, trusting the process and just saying, okay, I'm going to put this out there, and now I'm going to forget about it. Now I'm going to go and do other stuff. But it has to be that kind of trusting that the universe is going to provide this for you.
That is amazing. That's a great idea. If you're getting a massage, you can do an intention that the massage, creates what it wants. Or if you're whatever you're doing, that you
yeah.
can put an intention behind it and speed up the healing process. That's what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And also just, put that in there, and the more, it's like a muscle, just exercising a muscle. The more you use it, the better you get at it.
Yes.
And the more you use it, the more you trust it. Because you start seeing the process, you start seeing the results. And the only thing about it is, I will say, is that intention is a practice that takes practice. And one of the things that I do is I do master classes in it, because when I was studying the intention experiment and writing the book, I went to speak to a lot of intention masters, you know, master healers, Buddhist monks, Qigong masters, and I wanted to see what they used with their intention. And each of them had the particularities of whatever their practice was, but they also had a lot of commonalities that were the same among all kinds of people using different kinds of practices. So what I did was distill those commonalities into a simple program everybody can follow. But there's also all sorts of things that people need to do, and they need to learn how to clear their mind of doubt. They need to learn how to train their brains a lot. They need to learn how to do negative intention, etc. So for real intention mastery, it's like learning to play the piano.
That's amazing. And is all of that, well, a lot of that information included in the special offer that you've put together? Those are the techniques that you've figured out, the boiled down techniques?
Well, what I've put in the offer is really about brain training for intuition in the main, and intention in relationships. I think that's what people will find in the offer. And I think that's one aspect of it that I think is very powerful.
So, but obviously the intention in relationships and the brain training, all of that has to do with these common threads that run through what the masters know about intention. And I think that's fascinating.
Oh, absolutely. That's one aspect of it, definitely. And it's a really important part, because if you start with brain training, then you start becoming much more intuitive. And I've also included a teleseminar about psychic ability, because once again, we all are psychic, but we just don't know how to access this information.
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar, the remote viewing and what you're talking about in terms of your intention experiments. What's the difference? Is it the similar techniques between remote viewing and intention?
Remote viewing shares some of the common practices of going with the first hit. Remote viewing is being the ability to literally see with beyond your senses. A good remote viewer, you can give them a map coordinate of someplace anywhere in the globe, and they'll tell you what's there. I mean, it's really quite remarkable what they do. And or you can have a box wrapped up, and something's inside the box, and a remote viewer will essentially see inside the box. Mm. And so that's a kind of similar process. It, again, takes some training to learn to go with the first thing that's coming into your mind.
So the interesting thing is those types of thoughts, even if they're scary or negative types of thoughts, you have to go with something like that too, right? Normally we see something that might not feel good and push it away, right?
Well, I think we have to learn how to do it. As I say, there are techniques to learn. We all have that innate ability. We all have extended human potential and something beside. We all have 6th, 7th, and 8th senses, but we just don't know how to use them. We have never been taught this. We've been taught a very different paradigm.
Right.
So it's about rediscovering those latent abilities and then learning them as a practice, just as you learn to walk, just as you learn to talk, just as you learn to play the piano, as I say, or run or ride a bike. You can learn to use these abilities, but you do need to practice.
So I want to ask you about the magazine that you have behind you, What Doctors Don't Tell You, and this has been a creation of yours. For how many years have you been doing that magazine?
Well, we've done a newsletter by the same name for 25 years, and then
wow,
we changed it 3 years ago to become a magazine. We felt it was time to make it a newsstand magazine.
Online magazine as well, right?
Yeah. So it's a newsstand magazine in 10 countries and an online magazine anywhere.
That's a huge undertaking, and it has. And the title itself, "What Doctors Don't Tell You," alludes to the fact that these are some of the healing techniques that the body has innately been able to use, and how to aid the body in using those. And it's been an incredible journey for you, I understand. Incredible journey.
It really has. Yeah, we were interested in what works and what doesn't work in conventional and alternative medicine. And we started with the intention of reporting on those conventional treatments that have no evidence of working. So things like, you know, or that do more harm than good, like mammography, for instance, which people are finally agreeing with us, does more harm than good. And we also wanted to write about non-drug treatments for medicine, and also what's the evidence for them, because there was also a lot of stuff out there that had no evidence of working, so, and we wanted to distinguish between what works and what doesn't work, so that people can become more informed as consumers and take control of their own health. And that desire of ours has just grown stronger over the years, as we've seen that drug-based medicine has really taken over and is causing, you know, it's the third leading cause of death in the West now.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And what also what you're talking about, the intention experiments and the intentionality can override many of these, well, complement many of the alternative practices that we have available to us, but it empowers the patient. It empowers us to take charge of our own health, which the pharmaceutical is, it basically says that there's something outside of yourself that needs to heal you, and the intention experiments say there's something inside of your health, yourself, that can heal you, so that can aid towards your healing. So there are two different opposing approaches, which is what you're doing is really basically empowering the individual and the thought process and the brain training and so forth around that. So I can understand how industry would be threatened by something like that.
Well, yeah, because what we're basically saying is the body is not a machine that gets broken. You know, the body doesn't have to just take, you know, a pill in order to get better. The body is a complex thing that is a mix of spiritual, emotional, physical, mental components, and you have so many elements of the healing situation. It's a healing transaction, basically, between you and your healer. And that includes their intentions, your intentions. So a doctor who says to you something like, you've got 3 months to live, has just delivered a death sentence to you, because his intention is that you're not going to make it. And, of course, no one can determine.
He's trying to cover his own, you know, back in terms of legally, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has to do that legally, but what he has inadvertently done is damage the patient, because he set an intention for that patient to die. He said, you don't have a chance. And no one can say that with any certainty, how someone is going to respond to the challenge of a health crisis. No one can, not the best doctor in the world. So, and there are many, many instances of people who have defied every kind of odds because of a load of things, but primarily and fundamentally the power of intention, their intention to get well.
There's, you know, with all of the awareness that you and I speak about in our communities, and Dr. Norm Shealy and Bernie Siegel and all these amazing neurosurgeons, where they talk about to never say that to a patient again, you have 3 months to live. I am hoping that and maybe you know more than me about the whole, is that changing? Do you think that all doctors around the world are really getting aware of the fact that that is no longer something to say to a patient? I really am hoping that's the case.
Yeah, I think they're starting to. I mean, the problem is they're shackled by a lot of things, doctors. One of them is the legal issues in the States. They're so worried about being sued. And they're worried about being sued because a lot of the treatments that we have in modern medicine don't work very well. And so people don't get better, and they get worse, and they sue them. So there's that, and so they feel obliged to so-called tell the truth. And they're so diagnostically based. You know, diagnose the problem, give them a pill to fix it, or have surgery to fix it. That whole paradigm just sets people up for problems like that, and not being able to be more hopeful. And that's why I think the alternative community and the alternative medicine is a completely different relationship with the patient, and why it has a better success rate, basically.
Yeah.
You know, I'll say right now, I just really do need to say, though, that Western medicine is without parallel for anything that's an emergency. You know, if you get run over by a truck tomorrow, as certainly I do, I want the best of modern medicine to put me together, and that's where it shines.
Yes.
And we're talking about really chronic issues and degenerative diseases where medicine doesn't really, conventional medicine doesn't have.
It'd be a good subtitle, what doctors don't
changing
tell you. I'm sorry about that. Sound, can you hear me? There. A good subtitle would be what doctors don't tell you, but what your body does tell you. My father is a retired medical doctor, and I do have compassion for doctors because I saw what he went through with exactly what you're talking about in terms of the legal problems, and he was one of the good guys that wanted to spend time with the patients, yet he, you know, would spend 30, 40 minutes with the patient, and insurance would only pay him a certain amount of money for that. And it's more of running a business these days and protecting yourself legally than really being in the best interest of the patient. It's a trap for most doctors, and I see them go through that. So
yes,
I have always said the more empowered that you go into your doctor visit with, where you have done the research, understand the problem, come in with several fixes, and just ask some specific questions, I think that's a cooperative relationship that you could have with the doctor these days on both ends.
Well, that's certainly what we encourage. I mean, that's why we exist. We wanted patients to become much more well-informed, and we find many of our readers take our magazine in with them when they're seeing their doctors, and they ask questions. And, you know, certain things are changing. I mean, some of the medical authorities have just admitted, it's just been in some of the medical news, that there's so much over-treatment going on. They want to encourage patients and doctors to say, is this really necessary? Which is a wonderful step forward. And there's also, of course, a whole integrative movement where young doctors, new doctors, some other doctors are trying to say, let's take the best of alternative, complementary, and conventional medicine and use what works best for what condition. And so some things are changing, but let's not underestimate the power of the pharmaceutical industry. This is a business. Medicine is primarily a business. You said it, Lisa, but it is a business in a very powerful way by the pharmaceutical industry, in a very dirty way, too. And so the real key here is unshackling medicine from the pharmaceutical industry.
It's an interesting catch here. I was speaking with a doctor the other day that said, you know, we were talking about overprescription of antibiotics, and now we see in the body how the body's becoming resistant to antibiotics, and the superbugs out there are becoming antibiotic resistant as well. So then the pharmaceutical company comes up with another drug in order to counteract the antibiotic resistant superbugs and the body's antibiotic resistance. So it's a vicious cycle that is not going to go anywhere. And I think the only solution to something like that is to empower your own body to be able to fight these illnesses on their own. There's light therapies out there that are incredibly powerful for antiviral effects and antibacterial effects. There are so many alternative antiviral and antibacterial modalities available, which you report on, which I think is really the way out of this vicious cycle of antibiotic-resistant bodies and bacteria. So anyway, this is what you talk about. This is what you do. And I want to call people's attention to what it is that you've put together for us today, because Lynn is an incredibly talented medical researcher, analyst. She is an investigative reporter, so the information that she puts together is well-documented, well-researched, and Lynn has done the research for you, especially if you're a practitioner. Getting this offer is essential because there is so much information here that Lynn has put together. If you could tell us just a little bit about it, and the website, by the way, is theawareshow.com/ Lynn, L-Y-N-N-E. tell us just a little bit about it.
Okay, so we are offering three teleseminars that I've done on brain training, training your brain, so that means becoming much more intuitive, learning how to pick up all kinds of information, and learning specific techniques. So we go through a number of techniques, and also what's going on in your brain and the reason that we're trying to develop those areas. As I said, like the seeking mode of your brain and why that's important. We also have one about developing psychic powers, and that is more information about using the innate intuition, the innate other psychic abilities that you have, your ability to for precognition, and all kinds of things like that. And then the third one is going deeper. It's about using intention for relationships and how you access that information. How do you access more information, and how do you use the power of intention with your partners and with the people around you, the people you have to work with? So it's basically a bundle about developing your extrasensory perception. And it's something that, of course, people can use in every area of their lives, whether or not they're professionals or whether they simply want to become better intenders and better receivers of information.
As you said, those biophoton emissions, is that what you called them? How we all have that circulating. So it's brain, it's intuition, and it's relationship. And those are, that's such a comprehensive way of looking at, of upgrading your life completely, of enhancing your health, of incredible health, because those three things, I mean, really, you're talking about manifesting, really. The brain, the intuition, and what it has to do with relationships, that's life. That's what our life is. It's that wonderful kind of a combination of those three things, brain, intuition, and relationships. That's a great way of putting it together. So again, the website is theawareshow.com/Lynn, L-Y-N-N-E. And what I just love this interview, Lynn, because you have such wonderful validation for these techniques, and you put the science behind it, and you talk about the experiments and how and why it works and has worked for other people repetitively. And I think that is so valuable when it comes to watching and listening and learning, because you've got the science that backs it all up. I'm a big fan of that. That happens to be my analytical brain goes there, but yet I have this wonderful brain of faith as well that I believe that I can achieve and create these different types of things as a result of my brain injury. I've completely healed my brain from that very traumatic injury, so I am the first person to tell you how possible it is, but you provide the science. So I'm the belief factor over here saying, if I can do it, you can do it, but here's how. And then Lynn gives you that information in her material. So once again, it's theawareshow.com/Lynn, L-Y-N-N-E. This is an empowerment tool for you to be able to create your ideal health and body, mind, body, and spirit. So thank you so much, Lynn. You're just so wonderful to speak with. You have such a base of knowledge that I could talk with you all day about. So sorry about my soapbox there about the pharmaceuticals, but I know that you're on the same page. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
All righty. Thank you, Lisa. It's been a pleasure being with you again, as always.
Ah, thanks, Lynn. All right. Well, I encourage you, once again, go to the website, which is theawareshow.com/Lynn, L-Y-N-N-E, and learn how you can use the power of your brain and intentionality to heal your mind, your body, your relationships, and then ultimately how that creates the life that you desire. All right, until next time, I invite you all to stay aware.